From Hook and Bullet to Policy and Science, we're here to discuss and dissect all matters of importance to Montana's rugged landscape and the people and wildlife that call it home. This is Montana Untamed. Wolverines are a species that often seems part animal and part myth. With a weasel's mentality, it's known for punching well above its weight, thriving in areas where few animals survive and captivating popular fascination. Wolverines are also a species of scientific intrigue, living at very low densities in wild and intact ecosystems that make them a challenge to study. Several wolverine sightings captured headlines last winter as rare appearances became an opportunity for experts to share the ecology of this largest member of the weasel family. Tom Kuglin from the Montana State News Bureau is with me today, and he's had a long-held interest in wolverines. Can you talk about your work reporting on them, Tom?
Sure, Tom. So I went to graduate school at the University of Montana's Environmental Science and Natural Resource Program, journalism program, and right away I knew I wanted to do something on wolverines. I just sort of found them interesting. I read Doug Chadwick's book about Glacier Park and studying them there, and so I kind of set out to try to find some new questions about it and sort of what I wanted to focus my master's project on, and that ended up taking me to a lot of pretty cool places. I ended up in Banff National Park in Canada and looking at a project up there where they were trying to figure out how they have a major highway that cuts right through national parks up there, and sort of how the animals are able to move back and forth with structures and whether they're successful and diverse up there. Ended up in Idaho and, of course, Montana, looking at, you know, similar ways that not only they're being studied, but how different groups or organizations were getting people interested in them, right. Which was basically through citizen science programs, trying to raise awareness while also trying to get data. The question I was asking through that was, is this a good idea?
Right.
Because when you start bringing volunteers in, that means, how do you train them properly to gather good data, especially when you're talking about a low density, hard to study species,
right?
Like lynx or wolverine or fishers or anything like that, where you just, you know, they're out there, but you don't see them often, and we don't know a ton about them. So that's sort of how I initially became interested in them, and attended different conferences. I got to know some experts in the field, and spent additional time sort of reporting on them here and there. I started working in newspapers. It's a species you can always write about,
right?
Try to find something new about them, or a new study, or new questions about them, or anything like that. One of my favorite things to write about is when they show up in weird places.
which just happened.
Yeah. A couple times I'm just thinking of, there was a couple times, one time a couple years ago, we had one in the middle of a stubble field outside of, I think it was Haver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not talking about Glacier Park or the Bob.
Right.
We're talking about a stubble field outside Haver. And I got a kick out of that, and people got a kick out of that too. And then it ended up actually, it might have been, nobody knows, but the wolverine that became the first wolverine detected in North Dakota in
a century
was killed there. And that wolverine actually happened to be the first wolverine that was detected in Colorado in like 100 years. So
no kidding, the same animal was not only in Colorado but also
walked from Colorado. It walked from Wyoming to Colorado at some point. Then it must have made its way back through Wyoming and Montana, likely Montana. I don't think there was any reported sightings in South Dakota.
Right.
And then it ended up.
And what happened to it in North Dakota? It was shot by a farmer, right?
It was shot by a farmer under North Dakota law. It's still, even though they aren't really there,
right,
it's still on the books as a species that can be shot for harassing livestock, and that's what happened. And it's not clear that the guy who shot it really knew what it was. So, but anyway, we're kind of digressing there. But then, about 5 years ago, something I found pretty exciting was a multi-state wolverine study and what it was Washington, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, said populations of wolverines, you know, how many are out there? That's a pretty hard number to figure out. So I started reporting on that, and you know, picked stuff up here and there too, and different stories on them. So
now there we had a more recent wolverine sighting that made the news just this last winter, right?
Yeah, we've had a couple actually. There was a pretty neat one in Utah. There are a few in Utah that are known about. But I think the ones that got the biggest headlines is they saw one in Yellowstone Park. Some tourists from California got some pretty excellent video of it. And we know they're around Yellowstone.
Right. That's a little bit more characteristic of the ecosystem that they...
Yeah, and they're not there in huge numbers, and they're not in huge numbers anywhere, but they're definitely in from what we know, seeing one inside the park isn't a very common thing.
Right.
But then the one that I really... got excited about and jumped on right away. I'm sure I had a million other things to do, but when, you know, right. You see a wolverine running by the middle school in Lewistown,
yeah,
you say, I'm going to push some stuff to the side and see if I can't get a couple people on the phone. And that's just always fun when you talk to people who are like, wow, we saw this incredibly rare animal ran through the middle of town.
And if I remember right, it was the math teacher? Was it the math teacher from the high school that sent us photos of it running through basically the parking lot of the middle school, right?
Yeah, it went through the parking lot of the middle school. And then a guy who works for the city of Lewistown was out. He was getting ready to plow roads that morning, and he got a really good video of it too. Mm-hmm. And let us use that. And that was really cool. You know, when you call people up, and they just want you to share it.
Right.
They want to share the experience, you know. In this business, sometimes you get people who want money in return, and you know, by all means, we're a capitalist society, go for it. But I really enjoy it though when people are so excited that they just want to share the experience and sort of relish in it, and we can all share it together.
Right. And now obviously a wolverine, you know, at the middle school in Lewistown is uncharacteristic of wolverines, but the mountain ranges around Lewistown, do we know if they're holding a wolverine population? I mean, is Lewistown that far? Obviously, the urban part of Lewistown is atypical, but yeah. Is that area, that part of the world, atypical for a wolverine to?
We can kind of jump back into the multi-state study. So, and we can jump around here a little bit about sort of how Montana looks at them. But
you mentioned it before. Let's jump into this multi-state study that you have recently reported on.
Yeah. So, 2016. Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and Washington basically took all what's considered good wolverine habitat, put that in a GIS layer, and mm-hmm. then using sort of what they know about them, typically how they're studied, or not studied, but and I think a lot of people have seen this before, but how they look for wolverines typically is a bait station.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll take metal brushes, they'll hang a piece of bait, put some smelly lure on it, usually throw a trail camera on it, and then see if they get a wolverine to come in or not.
Well, and hold on, for people who aren't familiar, can you maybe rewind and illustrate that a little bit? You said metal brushes, that's to collect a hair sample.
Correct. So okay. What they do, the metal brushes will grab the hair sample, and then they do DNA analysis on that. So
and that's kind of around the base of the tree. So mm-hmm. the idea is that the wolverine would pass through these metal brushes on their way to the bait.
Correct, yeah. So, you know, that's been a successful model. They figured, you know, pretty good detection probability right. with that model. And in the last few years, and this is actually pretty interesting, Microsoft developed a scent dispenser.
Wow.
So... there's two different stations out there right now. One of them still uses a bait where, you know, you put roadkill or a beaver or something on a tree to mm-hmm. attract and get that food reward. They've worked on with like a white bone. Mm-hmm. They'll hang that, and then they'll have this scent dispenser, which will just dispense a little bit of scent every periodically.
Right. And how does that make it? How does that benefit people who are trying to track wolverines?
For one thing, it's a lot cheaper.
Cheaper.
And you can hang it, say, in a very remote area, leave it all fall and winter and come back and get it in the spring.
Whereas with the roadkill approach, they're having to revisit these sites and rebait
multiple
them.
Times right. during the winter. And they do it in winter, we should point out, because if you didn't, bears would destroy the sites.
Okay, right, of course.
Pretty quickly, I think. But so, yeah, so they have these, you know, various remote sites, right. Two different styles, but they found that there's actually pretty similar probability of detection with both styles.
Okay.
So
we've got this Wolverine, this multi-state Wolverine study, and now it sounds like they've developed a little bit more efficient way of tracking them. And so what did you find? What is this study found, or is it still in the works?
Sure. So 2016 is what we call a baseline study. Mm-hmm. That means we're going to go out and we're going to figure out how many of these stations in good Wolverine habitat are going to have Wolverine in them.
Are going to get hit by a living, breathing Wolverine.
Correct. And they were actually really successful. Let's see. So they had 183 stations across those four states.
Let's remind people what states we're talking. Montana, Idaho, Wyoming.
And Washington State.
And Washington State.
So okay. Cascades. Yeah. And of those, 59 of the 183 had a Wolverine visit.
Oh, wow.
So, and that, again, that was 2016. So kind of to back up a little bit, why are they taking this approach? Well, counting Wolverines is hard.
Right.
They're very low density. They live in very remote places. We know that. So what they're kind of looking at is whether what they consider good Wolverine habitat is occupied or unoccupied. So
okay.
It's a little different way of, like, you know, studying the population. So say you have this baseline study where you say, okay, this was occupied, and they come back in 5 years, which mm-hmm. is what they said they're going to do. Every 5 years, say in 10 years, there's no Wolverines there.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're starting to track trends based on habitat occupancy rather than number of individuals.
Okay.
So I think that's a pretty easy concept for most people to understand.
Right,
but they were pretty successful about this. So 5 years has gone by. In the fall, not only did Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Wyoming repeat the study, they've now added Utah, Colorado, and Oregon to the study.
Why is that? Our understanding where Wolverines are, has that changed in the last 5 years, and that's why they're included, or
because it has Wolverine habitat.
Okay.
Utah again has been known to have some Wolverines. Oregon has some, not many, and Colorado is sort of an interesting one, and we could circle back to that. It had the one. It does not currently have one, but there's talk about because Colorado's mountains are so much higher than Montana.
Right.
You know. They go to 14,000 feet
yep.
all over the state there. And in Montana, the highest peak, Granite Peak, is 12-something.
Mm-hmm.
When you start talking about things like climate change and loss of habitat, everybody looks at Colorado and says, we could basically double the amount of Wolverine available habitat if they were there. So
the idea being as that, you know, high elevation ecosystems maybe mm-hmm. degrade in these other states where the climate change is having an effect.
Correct.
Colorado may be kind of a haven for Wolverine habitat if we could get them there or if we could find out if they're there or not.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
So, and same with like California. Some of the Sierras are really high. I mean,
right.
14,000 feet
yeah.
in parts of it. There's only been, I think, one Wolverine detected in California, and somebody's going to tell me, well, no, it was two.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But yeah, no, in like 100 years too. So, I mean, we're talking about an animal that was pretty prevalent throughout it, you know, kind of collateral damage from poisoning campaigns of predators and, mm-hmm. and things like that. But slowly but surely reoccupied a lot of its habitat in Montana and Idaho, somewhat in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they do find them in Washington too. So
I guess we should have started with this. What's the objective of this study? Is it just to count them? Is it to verify viable habitat? Or is it to find places where there aren't Wolverines that maybe they could be relocated to?
So a survey where you're surveying what that is as a data producer.
Okay.
The management questions are...
We left up to state agencies.
Are left up to land manager and state agencies. Okay. So, but you make an excellent point. The questions that they want to answer are, say they want to do a timber project. We know there's wolverines there.
Right.
One thing we should say, though, is that wolverines have been a candidate species off and on for Endangered Species Act.
Mm-hmm.
They're not currently listed. Mm-hmm. It's one of those species that I think it's been considered twice and denied twice, and
okay.
It's in court currently. So maybe they will, maybe they won't be listed at some point. Currently, they're still under state management, but there's in the lower 48, there's no trapping season. Montana had one until about a decade ago, but it was like very low numbers, like 4 or 5 animals total for the whole state. So
how long is this study? What's the timeline on their study? When is it going to continue in perpetuity, or is there a conclusion?
That's the nature of the survey. Is they did the baseline study, and now this winter, fall and winter, they're back doing it with those 3 other states.
Right.
I think they want to bring California aboard at some point.
There
was talk of that, and it wasn't clear why California didn't participate, but I've heard some different things. But no, they want to do this every 5 years.
Right.
And see what they see. So
okay.
Continue to produce the data, and that will inform the management.
Okay. And hey, I guess I should mention this. If you're listening and you're in California and you have pictures of a wolverine walking down your street or hanging out at your middle school, please send them to us. We would love to drop everything we do to investigate your wolverine sightings. So you kind of mentioned on it, Tom. Let's go back. Let's kind of zoom in a little bit more on Montana, and let's talk about how Montana manages their wolverine population.
Sure. So Montana has different classifications for animals. We've been through this a lot because mm-hmm. it does matter legally speaking.
Right.
Wolverine's a fur bearer.
Okay.
So, like I said, there was historically trapping in Montana. It increasingly became regulated and then was ultimately halted. In part due to court action directly related to wolverines, but also there was a settlement related to Canada lynx, which are listed.
Right.
They tend to live in the same habitat,
okay.
So you didn't want to have a bycatch of a wolverine there. So, you know, the efforts to list them and their focus on what climate change means for them has been sort of the questions around them. So they're not federally listed, and actually when you look at what habitat is recognized as good wolverine habitat, about 92% of that is actually federal land with some type of protection on it.
Okay.
So, you know, the development part of it in their actual core habitat isn't, I think, as big a concern as maybe people thought it might be at one point. But, I mean, obviously with the valley bottoms.
Right.
How are they going to move in between?
Corridors, right.
Where they need to go. So.
Right.
That's the question.
I'm
seeing more and more. And also, when you start to think about, we heard a lot about denning habitat, too. And females need snowpack to den in. I think there's some questions there and continuing to look at how dependent are they on that high mountain snowpack, so they know more about what it's going to mean when there's less of it and for less period of time.
Okay.
As we move into the future, so...
So you that was a little tangential.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we could. So they are classified as a fur bearer in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So you can harvest them, but you cannot trap them.
No
harvest whatsoever.
There's no harvest anymore in Montana.
None at all.
There is some in Canada.
Okay.
And Alaska.
Okay.
But no, nowhere in the lower 48 can you kill a wolverine. So
only
on
get
purpose.
To shoot pictures.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool.
Yep.
So before we wrap up, Tom, I asked you about the mountains around Lewistown and if it was abnormal to have a wolverine lurking around in that part of the state. And so what did this, is there anything we can glean from this study about, you know, wolverines in the Lewistown area?
Sort of, but it's going to take a little bit of explanation. So
here we go.
What we know is they're just an animal that moves around a lot.
Okay.
So with that in mind, the multi-state study did pick up a wolverine in the Little Belts. that would be a little closer, like King's Hill, closer to White Sulphur.
Right, right.
But there's no doubt, and even FWP, when I talked to them about it, they said, yeah, no, they're from the little belts for a Wolverine to jump over to the Snowies is nothing.
It's not a big deal at all.
Not a big deal at all. And it's happening, but I mean,
right,
in very low numbers and, you know, not something people notice necessarily. So
I mean, we'll remind folks that we started this episode talking about a Wolverine that went from Colorado all the way to North Dakota.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So, so the Snowies, I mean, are right there. So, yeah, I mean, in the middle of town, just because of their numbers. Interestingly, though, I talked to a guy named Jeff Copeland. He did sort of the big study that Doug Chadwick's book was on in Glacier. And he's just like, you know, they get this reputation for being elusive. He's like, no, they're actually pretty curious. And if you've ever seen like a weasel, like an ermine out in the wild, man, they're fearless.
Right.
No,
right.
Turn that into a 30 or 40 pound animal. And that's sort of what you get with the Wolverine. But they just seem elusive because they're in such low densities and typically live in
people,
pretty remote
you're not
areas.
Just seeing them all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, they definitely move around. And interestingly, one of the things we talked about with the multi-state study informing management, that is the question you brought up, is are there areas where there aren't Wolverines where we want them to be? Or
right.
Maybe we want them to be is too simplistic, but where we think they ought to be.
Right, where they would be viable.
Yeah. In Montana, not so much. It seems like... people I've talked to here seem to think that, yeah, if there's Wolverines here and they're at low densities, and, you know, frankly, they were probably at low densities in the Pleistocene.
Right.
So there's some issues with movement back and forth. But
basically, just so I'm understanding you, the idea is that the habitat that is viable for Wolverines in Montana probably already has Wolverines in it.
That seems to be what the baseline survey suggested, that
right.
they were there. Same, you know, central Idaho, Sawtooths, places like that. Yeah, no, they're there.
Okay.
Wyoming's a little more interesting because then you're really getting to the southern edge of what they would consider them reoccupying their range after extirpation.
Okay.
And then Colorado. So right now, and I should back up a little bit. About a decade ago, Colorado talked about transplanting Wolverines into the state.
Okay.
And establishing populations there. They didn't actually end up doing that. They ended up moving forward with Canada lynx more.
Okay.
But more recently, like within the last few months, even like I think it's the first gentleman there, husband of the governor, even came out and said, yeah, we should be moving forward with this. So... Colorado, their wildlife agency has said, we're dusting off the plan.
Okay.
We're going to start talking about it.
Talking about bringing Wolverines back.
Yep, and doing a transplant. Interestingly, I mentioned Jeff Copeland, and I hadn't actually heard this before. I thought, so I talked to him for a story I wrote about the second iteration of the multi-state study, and he made some really interesting points, I thought, and I don't know how widespread they are within the wildlife management community, but he said, you know, generally speaking, Wolverine, an animal like a Wolverine, a transplant is a last resort. He said there are just so many factors when you're dealing with rare animals, and he said any source population has no surplus of Wolverines. Just by their nature, no matter where you got them from, there's no place where there's like too many of them, for is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So he basically said, you know, we saw this one already do it once. He said, if it takes 30 or 40 years, let them do it themselves.
Right.
And our responsibility, I guess, could be more, you know, making a corridor conducive to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there is debate around it, whether it's a good idea to do it. But it does seem to, outside of Copeland, and he's well-respected in that field, certainly, there does seem to be a lot of momentum and a lot of interest about bringing them to that state.
Interesting.
That, and I'm going to go off on a little bit of
Here
a tangent.
Go. Let's do it.
You start talking about the ESA again.
Right.
Endangered
Species Act.
Endangered Species Act. say they did get listed in the Northern Rockies,
right?
There could be some implications there, certainly, if you're talking about a transplanted, and agency speak, would be it could be an experimental, non-essential population compared to if they went there themselves and then got listed.
Okay.
So there are some other issues there about actual, like, regulatory classifications about them if they're transplanted or not. But again, there's a lot of interest and some pretty good steam behind the effort to transplant them into Colorado. So we'll see if it happens.
Right.
I don't think they would take them from Montana.
Okay.
More likely Canada, but
right. Where there's a bigger population, I would think.
A bigger, more intact population.
Right.
Because anybody who's been to the Canadian Rockies knows it's like Glacier Park that goes on for hundreds of miles.
Right.
I mean, and all good wolverine habitat. So.
Right.
And they do have a trapping season there. So, I mean, there would also be a network of people, trappers that could be contracted to capture these animals for the transplant. So, I mean, when it happens, I don't know, but it seems like it's definitely on the table, and we'll be interested to see it. Everybody who kind of cares about this species and likes to learn more about them. So.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, thanks, Tom. It's they're a super cool critter, and you know, not only your academic studies, but your reporting has evolved them for years.
I know, and I've never seen one in Montana.
Oh,
I saw one in Alaska once, and I've seen tracks in Montana, and obviously been out on studies where they were.
Right.
Because, you know, we're going to bait stations and look at the camera, and there they were, you know, 2 days beforehand. But, yeah, I've never seen one in Montana. Up to bucket list, so.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're listening, folks, and you have the rare opportunity to see a wolverine, definitely cherish that moment, because you may never get to see one again in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Tom. Montana Untamed is a podcast from the newsrooms of Lee Enterprises Montana Newspapers. Visit any of our websites or subscribe wherever podcasts are found.